welcome to The Parent Equation with me, Aisha Murray. I'm a coach and I primarily support working parents and carers who believe that parenthood shouldn't be a barrier to a successful and fulfilling career. In this podcast series, I chat to inspirational working parents and ask them to share their own experiences of raising children alongside their careers. We talk about the struggles and the moments of joy. And I hope in each episode, there's something that can bring you a bit more strength and positivity. So please follow, listen and subscribe on all major platforms. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Parent Equation. Today, I am absolutely thrilled to have Annie Townend with me. Annie is a leadership consultant and an executive coach to teams and individuals. So welcome, Annie.
Hello. Lovely to be part of the conversation.
I'm so happy to have you here. And actually, it's funny because Annie and I met, might have been about 2 years ago, met virtually, because I was just leaving my job at BT and going into my coaching career for the first time. And I was recommended by Natasha, my manager, to get in touch with Annie because Annie was working for, I think it's a marketing society, is that right?
It is, yes.
With leadership and teams, etc. And Natasha was singing your praises. So I got in touch. And now you might not realise it, but you're my informal mentor, which is great.
I love being your informal mentor. And as with coaching, I learn as much from you as I do from being your informal mentor. So I absolutely am learning from you as well.
Oh, good. That's lovely. So I'm so happy to have you on today. So Annie is, I think, probably my first guest who has older children who've left home. So Annie, your daughters, I believe, are 31 and 24.
They are.
And you have been a working parent throughout their lives, I guess.
I have. I had my first daughter in my early 30s, by which time I was already working. And I was already working as a self-employed leadership consultant and facilitator. And that worked really well for me. I was working at Henley Business School on in-company programs. And I teamed up with a colleague who had a baby of a similar age. And we shared, when we were working, we shared the care of our little ones.
Okay.
And I've really enjoyed that throughout my parenting of little ones, of sharing the parenting with a friend, enabling them to be able to work and enabling me to work.
That's really interesting because that's genuinely never crossed my mind. So I think myself included and all my friends and colleagues have always gone for the obvious nursery childminder route when we've gone back to work. But I don't think it ever occurred to me to actually look into shared childcare with a friend. So how did you, whose idea was that? Where did that come from?
I think it first started with my friend and colleague who had a nanny, and we were working on the same program together. And she came over to stay with me near where I lived. And the nanny looked after both of our little ones. I was part of a parenting group, and another of my friends in that parenting group offered to, when I was working, offered to look after my oldest daughter and for us to do an exchange. So that's what we did. And although she wasn't working, I looked after her little one. And that's where it really started. Yeah. Neither of us had extra help. Both of our little ones went to the same baby nursery, but only for a very short time. And the nature of my work meant I needed a bit more time. She was able to give me that, and in exchange I gave that, so I had the two little ones, which was a great privilege, having my own little one and her little one. And we did different things, you know, so I loved being at home in the garden. She loved going on trips. So my oldest daughter, Fern, got to go on trips. And the same thing happened 8 years later, by which time I'd already practiced this sharing and really enjoyed it with a number of friends and babies of the same age and little ones. And the same thing happened again. And again, a really good friend looked after my youngest daughter, Sophia. She had membership to National Trust properties. Mm. And so what she would do is take both Sophia and her little one off to visit these gardens. She loves gardens. And in return, I would look after her little one. And if I couldn't look after and do the exchange, then I, you know, we found other ways of being able to share it.
I think that's great. And I wonder, actually, in the current situation we're all in, and with flexibility and flexible working being much higher on the agenda, I wonder whether there's something to be said actually for looking at childcare in a different way these days. And maybe going back to that more collaborative sharing.
I think so, because I can remember when I first moved to where we live now, and I was at home on my own, initially with just Fern, before I had Sophia, feeling very lonely and isolated, and wishing that I was part of more part of a community. That was before, that was after we'd moved here, and I didn't know people until she started to go to nursery. And that's when, having moved, she was a toddler, a tiny toddler when I moved here. So the relationship and exchange that I'd had when I was working at Henley Business School stopped, and I had to form new relationships here through the little nursery, the kindergarten that Fern went to, but they didn't happen immediately. And I remember feeling lonely and isolated, and wishing that I could walk somewhere to meet somebody and be part of a kind of shared care community. But I've had to create that.
But I think, again, similar to now, perhaps, that a feeling of loneliness, I imagine, I was talking about this actually the other day to somebody, is that if you've got a new baby now, especially your first baby, and you can't go out to any nurseries or baby groups or NCT meetings and that kind of thing, is that how do you now as a new mum sort of combat that feeling of loneliness and isolation with a new baby when everything is virtual and through a computer screen? I mean, we're all having to do it, but I think when you have the pressure of being a new mum on top of that, that must be incredibly hard at the moment.
I think so, because I got so much support from being part of that very first baby group that I was a member of. And it did mean a lot to meet in the same room as other new mothers with their, you know, very new mothers for the first time, being able to share experiences. And in fact, the next time when I felt really lonely and isolated was probably when first Fern, less so with Sophia, but when Fern was a teenager, because there wasn't the same opportunity to share. And because I've always worked, I've not always picked up at the school gates or dropped off, so I've missed out on that kind of opportunity to have conversations with other parents. But I remember feeling lonely and isolated and not being sure who I could talk with. I did talk with other mothers who had teenagers, but not necessarily mothers of the children I knew. So that changes over time with older children. When our children are very young, then typically we know the parents of whom they go to play with. But as they get older, there isn't that same kind of connection and or opportunity to share experiences.
No, exactly. When they move from primary to secondary school, they, again, I haven't got there quite, almost there next this coming year, obviously then the children at that age are much more independent, so as you say, you don't need to meet the parents like we did in the primary school days or the nursery days. So you probably do, as you say, go through a new phase of
Yes.
Having to get to grips with a whole different stage of their lives and understand what they're going through. So then as a coach, do you think, because you are an expert at coaching other people through these kind of challenges and how to manage change in different situations, so when your children have gone through the different stages of their lives, do you think being a coach has helped you with that? Or is it quite hard maybe to apply those coaching principles to yourself?
That's a good question. It's a both and. I have sought help. Mm. So I've had supervision for my coaching work on and off throughout working as a consultant and coach. But I have also at particularly challenging times right through to last year sought help from therapy so that I can show up and be present for my clients. So yes, coaching has helped my understanding mm-hmm. of coaching and the principles and practice of coaching. And also because of my background and training mm-hmm. Prior to becoming a coach, I think it helped me to understand the different stages of growing up. But every stage is a different stage.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I can remember saying to Fern on one occasion when she was a teenager, you know, I'm still a new parent. I've never parented a 15-year-old yeah. before, you know.
Yeah.
So I have sought help at different times to help me, because I think things have been stirred up for me. One of the things I can remember when Fern was 10 years old, it stirred up memories for me of having been sent away to boarding school when okay. I was 10, mm. which wasn't something that I, and still isn't something I talk about very much, mm. but it is something that had a huge impact on me. And when she turned 10, I can remember thinking, gosh, I cannot imagine her being away at school, her not being here at home with me. And I became very curious about that. But at the same time, it really brought to the foreground my memory mm. and experience of being 10 years old, more than at any other time.
And were you, when you were sent to boarding school at age 10, were you involved in that conversation? Or was that something that was you were sort of made to do, or decision that you weren't involved in?
It was a decision made by my parents, and they had looked around at various schools. Nobody had ever been to a boarding school in our family before. Both my parents put great store in education. Both had benefited from being educated, and they had big ambitions for me and for my sister. And I think at the time, they saw boarding school as offering a better education than perhaps there was available locally. They chose a Quaker boarding school for me to go to, an all-girls boarding school. Mm. And that part of the education, the Quaker part of it, I learned a lot from. The experience of being away from home and at boarding school was very, very hard for me.
Yeah, yeah. And how long were you there for? How many years in total?
In total for 5 years, and then I came back to live with my parents in Yorkshire and went to the local comprehensive school.
So you talk
which
about,
was a huge change.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be. And you talk about being curious then about your daughter, age 10, and obviously imagining that if she'd gone away, what a strange situation that would be for you. So do you think then, I suppose, your appreciation of her at that age and being at home was increased because you had her at home and you weren't sending her away anywhere?
I think by the time I actually had Fern, I had had two ectopic pregnancies, so I'd had the experience of becoming pregnant and of imagining myself as a mum, and I really wanted to be a mother. It was something I wanted more than anything else at the time. It became more important to me, having spent my early 20s, you know, not wanting to get pregnant and worrying about getting pregnant, and then becoming pregnant very easily, and then it not working out was a great shock to me. And then again, when it didn't work out a second time, that was huge for me. So when I did become a mother to Fern, I felt so blessed, really. So, and I have never, and then when I became a mother to Sophia 8 years later, I feel every day blessed that I have children, that I am a mother, and really proud of both of them as well.
Do you think you treat them, it's a very hard question, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you think you treat them any differently because it was harder to get Fern in the first place? I mean, you do feel so, I mean, we all feel blessed, obviously, having healthy children. But the struggle that you went through, do you feel that you treat them in a different way, maybe?
Not really, no. It, with both of them, and the 8 year gap was not a planned gap. So I experienced not getting pregnant and losses in between. And so becoming a mother has given me so much, and the kind of the experience of love and of loving them in the way that I do and always will do has been wonderful.
Yeah, well, it's truly, truly unconditional, isn't it?
It really is.
It really is, and it's the only unconditional love that exists, perhaps, is with your children. Maybe. My husband probably doesn't want me to say that.
Well, I think it is a different kind of love. It is a, it's a constant love, and it's a precious love.
Yeah, yeah, it is. So then talking, going back to your work then, your early career as a new mum, did the way that, so one child, then obviously you had quite a big gap until Sophia came along, so maybe for that first 8 years, did the way you worked and your perception of work and career change after becoming a mother?
In the very first year of Fern's life, I had an opportunity through Henley Business School to write my first book. So it was a perfect time to be able to capture my thinking around leadership, because I had been working on in-company leadership programs, but in particular on what I brought to leadership was helping, and still is, helping leaders to be their confident best. So I wrote a book as part of a series that was published through Henley and Routledge on assertiveness for managers, which was basically about developing confidence, about becoming more of yourself. And that has been a thread throughout all my work. So having Fern gave me that opportunity to spend that first year focusing on the writing. I never got that opportunity again, but I did write another book, which I had to make time for.
Yeah.
I think working in the way that I do as a self-employed sole trader has worked for me very well, because I've been able to be there for them for the most part. Although they would say sometimes I wasn't there for them, there were times when I wasn't able to be there because I was physically somewhere else. Interestingly, it's only after Sophia finished university couple of years or so ago that I imagined myself traveling more, which is somewhat ironic at this time where we're not able to travel as much, it not at all. But I hadn't ever, when I traveled out of the country, wanted to stay over and spend a few days getting to know the people, the place, other than through the work, which has always felt like a real privilege to get to know people through my working with them. But I'd never extended the trips. And I remember thinking, once Sophia had finished university, now's my time to travel more. And I had just started doing that and spending more time either side of a work trip of working with an executive team. And that's obviously stopped for the time being and will never be the same again, I'm sure, because I love working virtually. I've found a way of working with teams virtually, which works. And interestingly, the program, the Marketing Leaders Program, which you mentioned at the beginning, where I met Natasha, we've now, my colleague and I from Brand Learning Accenture, through the Marketing Society, have created a virtual program, and we've run two of them, which are both wonderful opportunities for people to grow their marketing leadership and be part of a community of marketing leaders.
And also, imagine a more global community because it's all done online.
I think so. And that speaks to another passion of mine, which is around diversity and inclusivity. Last year, I had the privilege of being part of a much more global group on the certification in action learning with Shannon Banks from the World Institute of Action Learning. And originally, she and I had been in conversation about having this course happen in the UK. I think I mentioned it to you. And it did happen, and it happened virtually. And through that, I met people I would never have otherwise met. And it was made available to people who were, who would never have been able to travel to the UK. And I loved that richness, the diversity, and of us all being able to have that learning experience together.
Yes, an interesting, I suppose, dilemma in that on one hand, it brings, you said that, the diversity and the richness and the different opportunities to meet a sort of global, people's wrong word, you know what I mean? But on the flip side, we have then no physical human connection. So it's, I suppose, how long does this go on for, where we start to become so used to working like this and so used to being behind a screen that even when we're allowed to, we forget actually that we can go back outside and meet people face to face and sort of reignite that human connection, which is so important to us all. So it's going to be interesting how, as life gets back to normal, we readjust weirdly back to face to face.
I very much hope we do. My hope is that we'll be more thoughtful about how we spend our time and where we need to get the most out of our human interaction in the room. And I know that people have spoken to me about missing that. I miss that as well.
Yeah.
Very much so. And I hope that we'll go back to or go forward with a more conscious approach to when we are together, to really making the most of that time for being together.
Yeah, absolutely. I really hope so. Then let's just talk about some of your client experiences around sort of the working parent angle. So obviously your specialism is leaders and leadership. But obviously within that, you'll have leaders who are working parents, quite a few of them, I imagine. So is there anything that's come out of your career working with these leaders where you see a theme potentially where the working parent challenge kind of comes up in these discussions you have?
I think it's such a good question, because I don't think that parenting has come up as much as it is coming up now during this time of the pandemic. Mm. And it's coming up because of people having to home educate.
Yeah.
I've already had a conversation this week about how we can flex the team session around people's different homeschooling arrangements. Yeah. And I'm really up for that, really want to make it possible for people to have their team experience and to honour that they're also homeschooling. Yeah. So I have met through Zoom and Teams meetings more children plus animals and other members of the family, and that has been a very rich experience. It's actually opened up some different conversations around parenting, whereas I think previously I might know that people have children, and particularly working with women, I might know that they're managing that, but not talked about, not in the way it's being talked about now, because it's part of our everyday. And for those people who haven't got children, they're learning about, you know, people with children, and that I think might be for some people quite difficult.
Yeah, depending on what situation they're in.
Being at home on one's own and other people have their family around them. You know, I think it's now people are talking about this more.
And I think it's interesting you mentioned the kids thing, or sort of knowing that people have children, because I don't think actually, so this podcast was born out of the lockdown, really. And I don't think I knew that you had children until probably a few weeks ago.
Wow.
Because I think all the time we've spoken, it's always been about coaching and about sort of our relationship, and I just don't think it doesn't come up in conversation, which is fine. So actually the fact that we are in this lockdown situation and we have to talk about the homeschooling and I have to talk about the flexibility, and then you talk about your children, means it's a new conversation that may never have happened before. So I think, as you say, it adds another level of depth and interest to people. And hopefully from a team dynamic point of view, as you say, people understanding their teams better and what goes on at home better.
Yes.
And I think I mentioned on another episode of this podcast a while ago that families being exposed to each other's working lives is very interesting, I think, for couples and for families and for children to see mummy at work, or for the husband to see the wife at work and vice versa. And you see a completely different side of the people you live with, because you're all together and you're all seeing it all happen in the same space. So as frustrating and sort of claustrophobic as that can be, I think it's really interesting to see these other perspectives that people have on life and everything else that was going on in their lives, where normally they'd be out of the house. So I think that's, added a depth to people's relationships potentially.
I think so, a depth and breadth, and hopefully an understanding, a greater understanding of what goes on in people's lives outside of work.
Yeah, definitely. So going back to your kids, and this is more probably a selfish question because my kids are approaching, or the older ones, sort of teenage years, slowly but surely. When you're, and you've mentioned it briefly already, when your children approached their teenage years, teenagehood, again, did you, potentially as a coach or the sort of experience you had, empathise with them in a different way potentially? And if so, do you have any tips for somebody who's got kids nearing teenage years of how to deal with that change?
I do, because I remember it, and I remember a way of working that I've never lost, which is I never have worked back to back when I've worked away. So, for example, I've never worked with a team somewhere in the UK and then travelled to somewhere else to work with another team. And that's been my way of working. I've always allowed space for myself, but when my children were smaller, and particularly when they were teenagers, it became even more important to be around, not necessarily to do anything with them, because maybe they didn't want to. But my top tip would be to make time to be around. And I can remember talking with a team, and it's come up severally around having side by side coaching conversations. I'm a big fan of the walk and talk, as you may know. And I'm lucky to live where I do and be able to offer that to people as and when we're able to. And people have spoken to me about how sometimes, particularly with their teenagers, they've had the best conversations when they've been side by side, for example, in the car. So there is something about making the most of the time being around each other and noticing, which is something, of course, as a coach, that kind of noticing and paying attention and responding, that I think applies to parenting as well as coaching, that noticing, paying attention and responding, that became very important, maintaining that connection with their lives as they went through their teenage years, knowing that sometimes they wouldn't want to speak to me, they would be doing their own thing, and that sometimes they wouldn't want to talk about what they were doing, and respecting that. And that being something I had to learn, to, you know, that kind of staying connected with them whilst they separated from me and found their own feet, really, in the world, whilst always being there for them. So what mattered to me has always been being in connection with them. So always, even when perhaps they weren't so much in touch with me at different times, even now, you know, there might be times when I will just pop a message in WhatsApp or whatever, I love you, how are you doing, that kind of thing. So I've always kept up that connection. That's been really important to me.
Yeah, keeping those lines of communication open.
Yes.
As and when they need them, I guess, without and respecting their space.
Yes.
And I think I've heard about the car journey example before, I think. Maybe it was, might have even been used before, where if your child is, if you're not facing each other, and because you're looking obviously at the road and driving, they feel more comfortable talking and expressing themselves because they haven't got somebody focused directly eye to eye on them. I don't know if that's something that's true more scientifically, or whether it's something sort of anecdotal evidence.
I suspect there might be anecdotal evidence around moving. So in a car, whilst you're moving, you're moving. The same with walking, that you're side by side, shoulder to shoulder, and you're walking, that there is something about moving through, that there's that a kind of movement. Certainly evidence from walking that there is that kind of thing going on. And I think that kind of being there, just being available. Again, when my children were really small, I remember learning just to kind of go with the flow, to go with what they wanted to do, go with where they wanted to go, what they wanted to play at. And when they were teenagers, it was the same thing, sort of just being available to have whatever conversation they might want, you know, want to have, and that they could trust me. So if they shared something with me, I wouldn't share it with anybody else, that they could trust me. And that is important for me as a coach, that people can trust me and know that I won't talk about them and I won't. But also that I will really listen to them and I will go with them where they want to go, whilst potentially asking questions, hopefully helping them, sometimes challenging them because of something else that they've said. So you asked a question earlier about had the coaching practices helped in my parenting. I think that both have fed each other in a way, and that my children have been coaches to me. You know, they are the first to kind of hold up a mirror or make fun of something and, you know, have me think about something. But I'm proud to be a woman, a mother, and to work doing the work I love doing, and to be a role model for them, and a bit, and I hope a mother mentor for them, in the same way that I'm your informal mentor, because I think I'm of an age and with the experience where very much I want to share my knowledge, my experience, and keep learning. I mean, I love learning. I'm very, very curious. I care very much about people and want people to grow and develop in the same way that we would want our children to grow and develop and to be happy. That was very important to me. I think my parents probably wanted me to grow up and to be successful, and it took them quite a while to realize that I am successful in what I do, because they didn't really, years ago, see it as a proper job. Because their idea of a proper job was something else. And my father died a few years ago now, and he was hugely proud of me more latterly when he appreciated what I do. And one of my regrets is that he didn't get a chance to come and see me at work, which he would have have been able to do with some of the work that I do. And I feel the same towards my children. I'm hugely proud of them as they make their way in the world in their different ways. And they are so different in the same way that I'm hugely different from my sister and yet similar in some ways.
Yeah, definitely. And our children will go into careers and paths that we wouldn't understand, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
It'll change, you know, changes all the time, doesn't it? So we have to keep up with that, and as you say, just be proud of whatever they do, as long as they are happy and they're sticking at it and they're making the best, then that's all you can ask for, isn't it, really?
I think so. And being there for them when they're unhappy as well, and helping them to, you know, manage that. And I think that's also probably from learning to be a coach as well, that allowing people to bring all of themselves to the work in the same way that as a mother, I hope I've always allowed my children to, when I say allowed, that's the wrong word, but to let them have their feelings. If they're upset, they're upset. If they're angry, they're angry. And not to explain it away with, sometimes for sure it would be because they were hungry, but if they were angry, they were angry, rather than, oh, it's because they're tired or because of this or that. Sometimes it obviously was because they were hungry, but not always. So helping them to express their feelings and be able to articulate how they feel on a good day, on a bad day, and anything in between.
And I think for younger children, I know I probably find it a bit more difficult, because when they're younger, you do sort of, I suppose, get frustrated with their ups and downs and the tantrums and things. But actually, it's allowing those things to happen and to allow them to express those feelings, but also to give them the respect and the space for them to try and explain to you why they're feeling like that.
Yes.
So I think it's quite easy to dismiss children of any age. If they're angry or upset, oh, just don't worry about it, just stop being silly, just pull yourself together, a bit more old school maybe. But actually giving them space to and time to express why they're feeling like that
Yes.
And that respect, I think, is really important. And much more so these days, people are more aware of it, I think, these days, aren't they, of allowing that with children?
I think so. And it's so important allowing people to have their feelings and be able to articulate them. And I think in my work with leaders, you know, that I also tap into that with people is helping them to articulate how they feel about something and to express that in a way that can be heard and in which they feel understood. I often say in my work that I want people, the impact I want to have is that people feel seen, heard and understood. And that would be the same with my children. Yeah. I want them to feel seen, heard and understood through the listening, through the questioning, through the conversation. Yeah. So
all comes together.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Annie, that feels like a lovely natural place for us to wind up our great conversation.
Thank you.
I'm just so, like I said, I'm so happy that you have come on today. It's been great talking to you. And I'm sure there are people out there who will be looking for either leadership consultancy or just a friendly ear, because Annie's very easy to talk to, especially with the walk and talk in the lovely countryside where you live. So if people want to get hold of you, what's the best way?
Best way is either through my website, annietownend.com, or email me, annie@annietownend.com. That's Annie without an E. Or via LinkedIn. I regularly post on LinkedIn. As you know, Aisha, I'm doing a podcast as well called Leaders in Conversation.
Yes, indeed.
Conversation, and on a number of different channels as well. And I look forward to hearing from anybody who would like to have a conversation.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Annie. Have a wonderful day. It's been great to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Lovely talking with you.
Thanks, then. Bye.
Bye.
Annie and I had a separate conversation after the podcast recording about her relationship with her mother and how that shaped her, and also how that led Annie to be passionate about lifting up other women, myself included. So I just wanted to add that to this podcast because I think it's really valuable content and you'll really enjoy listening to it. So here it is.
When my mother got married, she stopped working. She worked as a teacher, which she enjoyed. Mm. She stopped working. And I asked her recently, did she choose to stop working or did she have to stop working? Because I have a memory of reading somewhere that when women got married, if they were teachers, then they had to stop working. And my mother did stop working, whether by choice or because she was married, and never went back to work. She was a housewife. And my experience of her, really bright, creative woman, is one that shaped me and made me want to work and find a way of being creative, and that being very much tied up for me with feeling confident in who I am. I think that she lost some of her self-confidence because she didn't do something that she was passionate about and would have been brilliant at and loved doing. So that definitely spurred me on, and I'm pleased that I discovered feminism when I was growing up and realised that there were opportunities for women, and that sits well with my wanting to help and support, mentor women and women leaders. One of the people I've had as a guest on my podcast is Jill Whitty Collins, who has just written a book called Why Men Win at Work. Mm. And she is passionate about gender equality. And it reminded me that of my passion, which never leaves me, around diversity and inclusivity and gender equality. So I want to bring that more and more into conversations.
Yeah, and it's great. I think you said before that you want to lift women up.
I do, yes. Definitely. Mm. And because I have been lifted up by women and men, but I wouldn't be doing the work that I'm doing now if along the way both women and men hadn't at different times believed in me when perhaps I didn't believe in me.
Yep.
So it's like me believing in you and what you do and your specialism, because I think you're brilliant as a coach and a coach working with parents and doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. And we need people who believe in us and who lift us up, particularly when we're down, and remind us who we are when we are at our confident best.
Yeah. So you do that so well, Annie. You do that so well with me, certainly. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Unsurprisingly, Annie has a wealth of experience, of insight, of wisdom to share with us all. And I was particularly interested in hearing her story about collaborative childcare when her kids were young, and about how she really respects her children and really respects their space and wants them to be independent and separate from her, but also loved and supported throughout their lives. So I hope you enjoyed this episode with Annie, and please remember to follow, like, and subscribe on all major platforms, and look forward to seeing you next time.